It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is here. Mary Jo Foley is here. As always, plenty to talk about, including Microsoft 365 in the cloud. It was not a good week for Microsoft 365. Details to follow. More on Windows 10 for ARM. And Eric Raymond says, Linux on the desktop. It's finally here. Paul explains why it's not exactly that clear. All that's coming up and a whole lot more next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly, episode 692, recorded Wednesday, September 30th, 2020. Happy Fiscal New Year. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Thinkst Canary. Detect attackers on your network while avoiding irritating false alarms. Get the alerts that matter. For 10% off and a 60-day money-back guarantee, go to canary.tools/twit and enter the code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box. And by Twilio. Strengthen your customer relationships by uniting communications across your entire business. Get everything you need to build and deliver a new customer experience with Twilio. Go to Twilio.com to learn more. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Joining us all the way from Asheville, North Carolina, because he's dropping his daughter off at college. Something I never thought anybody would be doing ever again. Mr. Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com. Paul's using some weird headphones, so he's going to sound a little weird today, but that's all right. We can struggle through. It works. We understand the words. That's all that matters.
The deep baritones we're going to have to turn to Mary Jo Foley.
She's got the deep baritone, Mike. All about Microsoft.com. You're going to talk like this now. And we're gathered together to talk about Microsoft. We're running a little late for those of you tuning in live because Google had a soporific night in event announcing its new Pixel 5 and its new Chromecast featuring Google TV, which used to be Android TV, but was Google TV before that.
So, I heard that Android TV is going to kind of stick around, but not really. It's like, because it's Google. I know.
I feel like Google just has lost the thread. It's like they're wandering.
Yeah.
It's in late stage dementia or something.
The first hint of this was Google I/O, where they're like, we're just not going to do it.
Yeah, we can't be bothered.
Everyone else is doing these awesome digital events.
Can't be bothered. Yeah. Well, let's not. We're not here to talk about the Goog. We're here to talk about the micro.
The win.
The win.
For the win.
For the win.
The apostrophe soft.
Soft.
There's really no good nickname for Microsoft.
It really isn't.
Big Green.
The mouse was the evil empire, but it's like kind of not really
not true anymore. Yeah, they're not the evil empire.
How do you say the version of Microsoft with a dollar sign instead of the S?
Yeah, micro. Right. Soft. I don't know. I don't know how you say the dollar sign. For a while, because of Big Blue, IBM, people were talking and calling it Big Green, but that didn't
right.
Call it.
No, that never stuck. No.
Just Microsoft. Yet another reason to think that's the worst name that Bill Gates could possibly have thought of. Did they ever say who thought up the name Microsoft? Was it Gates? Was it Paul Allen?
I think it was them
or one of them. Yeah, it wasn't.
They didn't think long and hard to find an name.
Given the climate of the day and what company names were and whatnot, microprocessor software, understandable how they arrived at it.
Yeah.
It's not understandable why someone didn't say, you know what that sounds like, though.
That's a terrible name.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of long and hard.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Windows 10. How about
Windows 10 on ARM?
What?
Yeah.
What?
Windows 10. Yeah. Oh, actually, Windows on ARM. WoA. WoA. Remember
WoA? WoA. WoA, man. What is the latest on WoA?
I know. We haven't heard anything about it in so long. And then out of the blue today comes a blog post from Panos Panay with a few little juicy details. We're going to get...
Were you confused by the timing of this? Didn't this seem kind of like just kind of out of nowhere?
Yes.
Attached to nothing in particular.
Yes, it does feel like that. I mean, back to school? No, not really. Like, I mean, everybody's launching laptops lately, so that could be why. Windows 10 laptops, right? And he's in charge, Panos is in charge of Windows client now, not just Surface. So he has to look like he's not favoring his own brand, right? But yeah, he in his blog post today said, guess what? Windows 10 on ARM will be able to run x64 apps with x64 emulation. So this is something Microsoft said at one point, this was impossible, right? And now it's like not only possible, it's happening. And it's going to be an insider builds in November. So there were rumors. I remember Rich Woods wrote about this. There were rumors about this coming at some point, but Microsoft would never say yes. And today it's just like, oh yeah, we're doing it. Here it is. Like, yeah.
Well, sure. they had said it a year and a half ago or something. They kind of, it was just part, it was a really minor little thing. And then we brought it up at that last Surface event, whenever that was.
Right. Yep.
And I remember the guy said, he said something like, we're working on it, never say never. And I said, or you said, someone of us said, but you literally did say never.
They did say never. Said, they said it was.
And he said,
impossible.
Well, we're not saying it anymore.
I know. So I'm like, okay. And so they also said today in their blog post that they're doing new versions of a bunch of apps to be optimally performant on Windows on ARM. So Visual Studio Code is going to have a native version on Windows on ARM. And they're redoing a Teams client for Windows on ARM. And Credge, I think there's going to be an updated version of Credge. They kind of were a little mushy on that point.
Faster performance,
Faster performance and better on battery life. All these things are coming. And kind of hinted there'd be other third-party apps from other companies coming for Windows on ARM. So I had kind of wondered if they were going to keep pushing with Windows on ARM, even though they had the Surface Pro X, which runs it. Because it just seemed like they were not talking about it anymore after talking about it a lot, right? And they just stopped talking about it.
Yeah. The problem is twofold. The software challenge is enormous, right? Getting x64 apps emulated on ARM is a huge problem.
A lot.
Why it didn't happen right up front, right? But the other half of the equation is the hardware itself. And when you look at, I think it's the SQ1 is the Microsoft chipset, which is basically a Snapdragon 8CX. Mm-hmm. Even those processors are just not, they're just not there yet, you know, performance-wise. So obviously there's a Gen 2 8CX that Qualcomm announced, I guess, a month or so ago. And then presumably there'll be a SH2 or whatever Microsoft calls the next
whatever
thing.
They call it. Right.
SQ2,
right.
Whatever. I might be screwing the name up. Yeah. Sorry. Whatever the name is. But yeah, I mean, those two things need to come together. So based on what Panos said today, I think we're looking at like this time next year, like the 21H2 probably for this to be mainstream.
Yeah. I mean, they still haven't said if there'll be two Windows 10 feature updates next year or if they're going to do a 10X update in the spring and a regular 10 update in the fall, which is what I heard they're going to do. So it all depends. If they move to that schedule, then this kind of capability, new features that they're adding in now through the dev channel and testing, they won't show up till, like you said, a year from now, right?
I think they won't be there.
So, but we don't know that for a fact. Yeah. I mean, it hasn't been said officially, so yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, so that's kind of it on Windows on ARM. But I was kind of happy to see something.
Yeah,
no, that's big news. Yeah. I mean, those two apps, two of the three apps that you mentioned, Edge and Teams, are super crucial for this platform, right? Those two are kind of like the foundation because everything runs on the web, obviously. And then Teams is, I mean, just the center of the Microsoft 365 universe. So that stuff is huge. I was interested that they said Visual Studio Code and not Visual Studio because one of the interesting things about big Visual Studio is that it does run on ARM because it's an x86 app somehow and not an x64 app. But the performance is unbelievably terrible. And when I first read that, I read it as Visual Studio. And then when I went back to quote it, I saw he said code. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's nice. But
it's still good. It's something,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well,
yeah.
VS Code runs on a Macintosh and it runs on Linux. So running on ARM is not particularly huge accomplishment.
Right, exactly.
It should run on
like
ARM.
Teams. It's the same thing. It's probably the same. What's
it's
the
Electron.
Are they both
Electron? Yeah.
Electron apps, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the whole point of Electron is it runs everywhere. Actually, in a way, that's a story. Electron runs on ARM. So that's good.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Right. Means we'll get Skype and much other stuff too. Edge is not obviously an Electron app, although
but Chrome, Chromium runs on
it's
ARM.
Strange so way it is, because it's running Chromium.
Yeah, the Edge port is native, like it has been since whatever time frame, but it's there. But of course, like a lot of big apps on ARM, it just doesn't run very well right now.
Okay, we've exhausted that subject.
This is as lackluster as the Google event. What's going on?
I think the NUE is catching.
We're just going to go right through
the
this.
The ennui is catching.
We also have two new phones to talk about.
You know, the Chromecast remote control looks just like a macaroon. They actually said that. They said it's appealing like a piece of candy, and then they put it next to a bunch of French macarons.
It comes in pink.
And it comes in pink. And it's round on the bottom. So,
yeah. It'll slide right between the cushions. It's perfectly
shaped. It's like perfectly positioned. Yeah.
Like a bar of soap with a Netflix button on it.
Paul, you're in good form today, my friend.
It is.
I hate to bring you down, but now it's time to talk about the new Windows 10 dev channel build.
No, there's a couple things worth talking about in
this.
Oh,
good. Okay.
There are. So first off, the big, quote, new feature is this new storage setting that they have that I think could be very useful, right? It's supposedly is going to warn you if your storage device might be ready to fail. It gives you a notification. Yep. That's kind of handy, right? Hey, by the way, your storage device is about to fail. You might want to back things up.
But the irony is the reason it's failing is because Windows 10 has a bug that keeps writing to the disk, and that's actually the problem with SSDs.
That's bad for them.
So that's in there. But I got to tell you, the thing that lit my eyes up when I read their notes was Notepad, of course. And there is a big change coming to Notepad that they noted in the list, which is Notepad is going to get, I don't know if it had before and they took it away, but Notepad's going to have a capability where you can have remain in state when there are restarts and updates. So if you have a Notepad window open, it'll stay there and you won't lose all the stuff in it when you'd have a restart.
That this is yet another feature that Microsoft has ripped off from my app. But actually, I've never heard of such a thing. That's nice.
It's nice. It's going to be very nice. I like it. So I always complain about, I don't want Notepad to change, but that's a kind of a change I won't mind. Right. So, your phone. We didn't talk about your phone, though. So your phone isn't part of Windows 10, but they always put the your phone updates in the blog posts, right? And I was excited to see they're doing some things to make your phone connectivity and management experience better, because I feel like, you know, when I set up the Surface Duo and I set up the recent Samsung device, I'm like, why is it so hard to set up your phone? This should be way easier, right? It's really not easy as it needs to be.
Yeah. So there's two halves to it, right? So there's this half on the device and the half on Windows, and both of them are terrible. And the way it is in Windows 10 today is if you go to your phone, it will actually say, okay, now you need to go to settings or you got to go to the web. Like there's different ways to manage the devices you have connected to your account, but none of them are in your phone. So now they're going to move it into your phone. So I assume it's going to leave settings at some point as well, because it's just going to be redundant. Because if you go into settings, I think it's the settings phone, you'll see an interface for it. But this is I always wondered why it wasn't just part of the app, and it looks like a nice UI too. So it seems like it's a nice improvement.
Yep. Right. So if you have multiple devices, not everybody has this problem, but if you have multiple devices that you want to connect through your phone to your PC, each one will have its own card so that you can manage them independently, which is good, you know, because when I was testing all these things at the same time, I was like switching between them and I'm like, wait, now I have to get rid of this one. Now I have to add this one. And you couldn't have all of them at once. And now you can.
Yeah. There's also this notion of a default device. And I don't know this for a fact, but hopefully what they'll be doing is making it so that on one computer, you could say, well, this phone is going to be my default and I want all my calls and everything to go through here. But over on a different computer, you might have it be a different device.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it was good. It's a good update. It's another Windows 10 dev channel feature build for people to test who are insiders. 20226. Is the number.
So, you know, timing on this is unclear. So the Europhone stuff will certainly appear at some point just for everybody, right? That's because it's an app update. Yeah. We'll eventually all get it. Don't have to be in the insiders. The storage thing, though, that's a Windows 10 feature. So probably given where we are now, it's some 21H1 or 281H2, whatever they do next year, it's going to be next year.
Yeah, 21H1 or 2, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Windows 10.
Do you have a show called Eric Raymond Weekly?
Yeah. No, but...
Because you should.
Paul wants to talk about it.
So Eric Raymond is a legend in the open source community. He wrote the Cathedral and the Bazaar, which is, you know, widely considered the best description of open source. Why is he in the news?
Because for comedy reasons, Leo, he wrote a blog post where he said, pretty soon now, it's only a matter of time before Windows is just a thin UI layer on top of Linux.
Yeah. He's not alone in that thinking, by the way.
Yes. But I thought that, you know, it's rather provocative. And he is who he is. I mean, he's a luminary. So I'm not going to just ignore it. Let me take a look at what he has to say. You never know. And unfortunately, I think in this case...
He's declaring victory in the Linux versus Microsoft desktop war.
Oh, yeah, he literally does.
Maybe a little premature.
He
says that Linux finally wins the desktop wars.
Yeah.
Not by displacing Windows, but by co-opting it. It's like an Isaac Asimov story written in the 1950s. Like, it's kind of nuts. But, you know, I think the problem with this is effort, cost, time. You know, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, if you're going to ride Windows out, if we kind of agree that it's not in maintenance mode, but it's sort of like this legacy platform that probably doesn't have any radical changes coming. I mean, it makes sense just to stick with what you have, not to completely change the platform for some reason. But I guess the problem I really have with it is just the upfront stuff, because the way he justifies it by saying, well, first of all, Microsoft makes most of its money today on Azure. And it's like record scratch. No, it doesn't. What are you talking about? So I went and looked at the numbers, right? So Microsoft doesn't have
But Azure does make more money than Windows. Or revenue is higher.
Yeah, not much more. So that's
I don't think it even does.
Didn't we show that graph? Didn't we show that graph where Azure was climbing and Windows and Office?
Let's look at the numbers.
Growth rate is big.
We'll never know for sure. We know what part of the business that Azure is in. I think we can estimate... direct revenues plus indirect revenues are somewhere between 30 to 35% of Microsoft's revenues. Windows is at about 26%, and that's just a rough guess based on it probably being the majority of that business unit, et cetera, et cetera. The thing is, Windows as an established business doesn't have a lot of back-end costs anymore, you know?
Right.
They're investing really heavily in Azure to grow it. And as they do that, I mean, the profit possibility there is very low. For now, you know, I mean, obviously Azure will become more and more a big chunk of Microsoft's revenues. But I also think we've seen kind of a leveling off when it comes to PC sales, which have been falling for several years, but now have been flat or even growing this year, actually. And as far as revenues go, or the percentage of revenues that Windows provides to Microsoft, 26%, you can go back and look at this. It was probably that 10 years ago. It's actually pretty stable.
Interesting. So it was only 26% even in years gone by.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've long sort of talked. We talked about Windows being Microsoft's biggest business far past the point where it was. I mean, Office surpassed it at one point. And then, you know, the server business, which became the Azure business, it's really kind of probably server plus cloud or whatever they call it, is bigger now as well.
Here's the question is, at what point does the cost of maintaining and updating Windows exceed the value, the revenue generated by Windows, right?
Well, so that's the other part of it. So you got to remember, Windows is now part of Microsoft 365, right? And Microsoft 365, you could make the case, is probably Microsoft's biggest moneymaker.
Because it's a subscription. It's an annuity.
And it's a way to take that the Windows money, so to speak, and make it normalized over a long period of time instead of having big ups and downs, you know, with sales and so forth. So, I mean, they'll hide it, and they'll hide it really well, and it may decline and we won't see it. But I think that Windows is going to be a big chunk of Microsoft's earnings for a long, long time.
For the foreseeable future. I agree. And by the way, we do have a number for Microsoft 365, thanks to my sources. In fiscal 20, Microsoft 365 contributed $20 billion in revenues.
Now, do you have the figure for the total revenue for that fiscal year?
$143 billion.
Oh, okay. So you're about right. 20,
yeah.
Yeah, it's 1/7. So it's about
1/7. Well, it's less than 26%. I did this based on the previous quarter only. Okay.
So it's big, and that's why everybody who's like, you know, they're not going to keep riding Windows. I'm like, of course they're going to keep riding Windows. As long as they can ride Windows, they will. Like, they're not going to. Well, I agree with you. They're not going to suddenly go, oh, you know what? Let's just put Windows on top of Linux. Like, that seems like a good idea.
You say that like it's a simple thing. We'll just transition it. And then we won't have to maintain it anymore, and there won't be any costs. It's like, hold on a second. What are you talking about?
I know.
Like for that to work, I mean, an incredible amount.
You know what I feel like revved up a lot of people? Because I've heard from a couple people who also are Linux users lately about, so do you think they're just going to stick with Windows? And I think what got this whole thing going was when Microsoft asked to apply some changes around Hyper-V to the Linux code base. And so people were like, oh, look, see what they're doing? They want to contribute Hyper-V to Linux, and this means they're going to back Linux instead of Windows. I'm like, that's not what's happening, I don't think, here.
Is it not the case, though, that Linux is the most popular operating system on Azure?
More than 50% of the workloads are Linux. Yeah.
It's funny because he kind of writes about that as if it were sort of a like a rumor, but Microsoft did say this.
They announced it.
Which would explain their support of Linux and their interest in Linux and why they're working on a Linux kernel.
Of course.
I like my theory better than Mr. Raymond's, and I have huge respect for Eric Raymond, but I think it's a matter of degree, because I believe Microsoft wants to move Windows to the cloud and have everybody run it out of the cloud anyway, at which point how it's running on Azure is irrelevant. It's how it's delivering the UI and capabilities to you.
The desktop.
Yeah.
Thing that he sort of gets right is that obviously there's going to be some future where Windows is not as important. And part of the problem we have in Windows is the thing we see in Windows 10 on ARM. It's just this backward compatibility thing is a huge issue.
It's killing it.
It's a big problem. So as more and more apps go to the cloud, to web apps, for example, or to mobile apps on other platforms, the need to bring forward old software becomes less and less important every year. So at some point, like he's sort of saying, like, this thing will strip away, and then Microsoft will say it's deprecated, and Microsoft will cancel it. And it's like, yeah, that probably will happen. But at that point, it's not because there's something called Windows that runs on top of Linux. It's because just Windows is just not a thing anymore. You know, that's a way more cost-effective way of maintaining the end of this platform than switching it over to something else. Do you think is that going to rejuvenate it somehow? I mean, I just don't think it makes sense.
We know they're working on something called Cloud PC Service, right? That's based on Azure. That's delivering the Windows desktop experience over Azure to people on any kind of a device. You know, it can be any kind of thin client.
Right.
That exists. Like, they're building that right now. It could launch next spring.
Yeah.
It's really
close. So you
could
run that from a Chromebook, from an iPad, from a Mac, whatever you want.
And you don't care what the kernel is that it's running in the cloud is irrelevant to you. Who cares?
Right. Exactly.
I just want my kernel to be maintained by Linus Torvalds. My number one requirement.
The real requirement is I want it to be maintained by Microsoft. I'm sick of patching. I'm sick of the flaws and the problems that patching brings us. I'm sick of the exploits. And so let Microsoft do it. And then
you can already do that now.
And it can.
This thing called Microsoft. Yeah. Microsoft 365 Managed Desktop. That is, Microsoft runs your PC yes. for you and does your patching. They do everything. They set it up.
It's a small step from that to having the. So who cares if the kernel's running on my hard drive on-prem or in the cloud?
Well, hold on a second. Right. We all want ELF binaries. I think we can all agree on that. And we all want pure Linux APIs.
No, we don't care. No. Yeah. No one cares. No one. Not even Linux users.
Yeah. I know.
Because really what it is you just want it to work.
I know.
Yeah, there you go.
And Microsoft's interest.
That's a real common sense approach.
Yeah, just want it to work. And Microsoft's interest, it loves this annuity, by the way. So,
right.
So it doesn't want to. I know they just announced they're selling a boxed, perpetual license version of Office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's for those seven holdouts.
It doesn't want to do that.
Literally last week, I talked to a bunch of Microsoft 365 customers. And I mean this literally universally. Well, one guy was from a managed service provider, but the other six, they all said the same thing. They said, look, we did the math. We figured it out, like what it costs to do this. Microsoft 365 makes sense financially.
Yes.
For customers.
You know who made that back envelope calculation first? Microsoft. Exactly. You know who controls pricing for everything?
Yep.
You don't think that somebody in the front office said, well, if you multiply that times 12.
Yeah, so I mean, like us as normal people, we might look at like a subscription and be like, $12.50 a month to run Word? That's crazy. But then you talk to these guys who are running these businesses, and they're small businesses too, like 2 to 100 people. 100 employees.
Yep.
They're like, yeah, no, this totally makes sense.
Yes.
Like, have you ever dealt with Microsoft licensing? Just for that alone, it makes sense.
This came home to me 5 or 6 years ago. I needed a copy of Word. I was in New York City, and I went to Staples, and I looked at the boxed copy of Office.
Yep.
It was, what was it, $700?
Yeah. I know.
You didn't go to the office vending machine that was outside the train station?
I choked. I said,
you're like, really?
Anybody who's bought a perpetual license knows how expensive it is. And it doesn't take a genius to do the math. Of course, the home version is, $8 a month? It's $69 a year.
Listen, even for businesses, the web-only version with mobile apps is $5 a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cheap. That's what I use.
By the way, interesting. Yeah. So they incent you to do the web-only version. Again, where does that run?
So, yeah, exactly. That's the Toys R Us model.
Yeah.
It's get you in the door. But no, I mean, you're going to have an organization with some people, that's fine. And then there are some people who need the apps, and that one's $12.50 a month.
Yeah.
And there are some, then they have all the different SKUs, and those go up. I mean, my God, you could probably spend $50 a month if you had to.
You're also competing against free versions like LibreOffice and Google Office, which isn't for business, not free, but still it's close to free.
And honestly, I think the Google stuff's pretty good. I always install like new LibreOffice releases just because you never know. And every time I do, I'm like, oh God, look, this is awful. Like the look of it is just terrible. Even the fonts are terrible. But the Google stuff is good. Yeah. But it's just, it's the same price for businesses.
Yeah. So that's the competition. That's who,
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
It is.
Literally, that's it.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, actually, there's one more competitor, guys. We forgot about it. It is the people who have an old version of Office and refuse to leave.
Yeah.
Like they're
that's most people.
Yeah, that's probably the
That's why they like the perpetual license. Because it's I still have it.
Yeah.
Oh, these are people who will painstakingly go through a phone call to make sure they can transfer their license of Office to from the computer they were using to the new computer because they are never paying for this thing again.
But I understand that too, because there aren't any features in the newer versions that they need.
Shut your mouth.
I mean,
well, it depends, right? It depends if you like some of those newer features. And even if you get the newest perpetual version, like the one that comes out next year of Office, it's not going to have those features, right? So there are features that are only cloud, and then there are features that are perpetual.
I would submit that the features that are important that you don't have are all cloud based.
That is true. And one of the weird things is new features often appear in the cloud version first.
Right.
Like that transcription feature in Word. You can only get it on the web with a Microsoft 365 account.
Yeah.
By the way, it's pretty good, too. It's,
So I think that if you're looking ahead, I don't think it's going to be the Linux on the desktop. That's not going to ever happen.
No,
that's
honestly,
over.
It's we're kind of already where it's going to be, which is the client doesn't matter.
Yes.
So today, there are a lot of people using Windows, literally a billion people. It's fine. And that number might go down slowly over time, whatever. But I don't see investing in some kind of an architectural switch. They can't even get apps running on Windows 10 and ARM. You want to move the whole thing to to Linux? I mean, come on. No. Like, this is never.
Right. I know. You know, I hate to say it this way, but I feel like a lot of the people who want this are the people who've been asking for the year of the desktop Linux, and they just want to be right, finally.
They're
they
never
want to say, look,
told
you
can't,
it was
gonna happen. Not going to happen.
You guys told me this was never going to
happen in 1998.
You know why it didn't happen? Because the year of the desktop is over. Desktops are over.
Exactly.
So
yeah, pretty much.
You ran out of runway. And I'm by the way, as I think you guys know, I'm a big Linux fan, and I like Linux, and I use it. And if you're a developer, if you're a network sysadmin, there are a lot of reasons you would run Linux, and you would need a desktop. But we're talking about the vast majority of just normal users.
It pains me to say this, but I mean, I care about this stuff a lot, but I mean, I don't think most people care about Windows at all. If you had a way to run the Windows app you needed, however you did, and whatever platform you would. And these mobile devices that can connect to big screens and keyboards and mice and turn into sort of computers are going to be great for a lot of people, combined with the thing Mary Jo was talking about, where you can blast a Word or whatever it is down from the cloud.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Cloud PC. Yep.
That's going to be fine, I think, for most people.
Yeah. Good. Good, good, good.
Sorry, Eric.
Well, no, his point isn't, he's not completely wrong. He just, I think.
Yeah.
He's stuck in this
model. Tunnel vision on Linux.
Yeah. I love ERS. I think he's great, but
I don't disrespect him. I want to be clear about it. He's not a nut. Like, if this guy was, he is nuts in this case. But if he was a complete nut job, I would have just ignored this.
Plus, he had disappeared for a while too, right? Like, and suddenly he's back. Right? I'm like, oh, there he is again.
Well, that's one way to get relevance is declare the victory of Linux on the desktop. That'll do it.
Yep. That will get the headlines.
That'll get the headlines.
It will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the 2004 penetration? Or did already talk about that?
Yeah, this is actually kind of interesting. So last month, remember this thing had gotten off to a real slow start, right? So last month usage had doubled, I want to say to 30. No, that's this month. Did I have the wrong month here? No, this is the right month. It had doubled month over month, I guess to like 24%. That's what it was last month. This month, it went up to 33%. So it's actually on one out of every three Windows 10 PCs out in the world. The interesting thing, though, there's two interesting things. The number one version is still 1909, but it's barely ahead. So this thing went from being installed on no computers to being neck and neck for being the most popular version of Windows 10, which is really interesting. Windows 10 1909 is on 34.5% of computers. Of course, that system in 1903, its predecessor, are basically the same version. So those two things combined are about 60%, 61, 62%, somewhere in there. This thing's 30, we'll call it 34%. So these three systems combined have all been released in the last year-ish and are like 90-something percent of all the versions of Windows 10. And I think this is where Microsoft wanted to get it. Ideally, it would be like the last two versions, but I think we probably have a month or two more of growth, right? Because 20H2, confusing, is finally going to ship.
This month, October.
Yeah.
This month,
right?
Yep.
So that will be the end of that. But it's interesting to me. It took a long time, right? But May, June, July, we were like, "What's going on here?" And all of a sudden, now it's kind of going gangbusters.
I got to tell you, though, this is an aside. So I got a firmware update 2 days ago or 3 days ago for the Surface Laptop 3. And now my Ethernet driver doesn't work anymore on 2004.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm like, guys, come on.
I know. I told you not to buy the Surface Laptop. I don't know why you never listened to me.
No, you know what? I'm blaming it more on being a seeker and getting 2004 early. But I can't even say that anymore because then they started pushing 2004 to Surface 3, Laptop 3. So I'm like, okay, I don't know.
I don't know either. Now I don't get it.
I don't
Microsoft's
get it either.
Own hardware.
This is the one thing I don't think anyone gets. We were just making fun of Google and their phones that nobody wants. Google puts their new OS is on their own phones day one, literally every time. Every time. It's one of the benefits of picking their phones, if that's what you want.
Right.
It's inexcusable that Microsoft doesn't do that.
Well, given all the problems so far with Surface devices and 2004, I'm happy they didn't do it right away. But hopefully Panos, now that he's running Windows Client and Surface, that he's going to try to get this problem in hand and take care of it.
Well, right. I mean, what I meant was it should also work.
You know, yes, like it should also work.
It seems
work.
Like they should be testing it on their own hardware as well.
You would think. So. Right. And that new Surface devices going out the door right now would ship with 2004 and not an older version, right?
They must, right? Right?
I don't think they do. Yeah. So, yeah. There you have it.
Paul, did you already download and compile your new version of Windows XP direct from source code? Did you find it? Did you get it?
It's on 4chan.
Of course. I don't want to go to 4chan for that.
Yeah,
so that's actually where my sleuthing stopped. So I guess some Windows XP source code has leaked in the past. Some Windows 10 source code is apparently. Windows 2000 is leaked. NT 3.5 leaked. Some Xbox, remember the original Xbox code? The Xbox Series X graphics code is leaked. This leak is Windows XP Service Pack 1 and Windows Server 2003. These are basically the same code base, remember? Same time frame, same rough time frame. I think 2003 lines up with SP2, I guess, exactly, if I remember correctly. But whatever, they're roughly the same time frame. Yeah, so obviously the fear here is that hackers will get this code and find vulnerabilities that will still exist in modern versions of Windows because some of the source code has to be the same. Has to be. But Microsoft said it's investigating it, and that's the last they've discussed it.
I just want to read the comments.
Yeah.
You know, there.
No, I just want to see that, like, that it was actually written in Object Pascal. Would be so great.
Would that be funny? Honestly, really, the comments are most of what you would read.
Right.
Yeah. Actually, Tom, I don't know where. It doesn't seem like this would have been part of the leak, but. Tom Warren, as part of his reporting about the leak, wrote and showed a picture of an Aqua-type theme, meaning the macOS UI. Because remember, macOS 10 came out in 2001 as well.
Mm-hmm.
And had that the Aqua UI, which is it looked like water capsules and stuff. Microsoft actually had a theme briefly during pre-release timeframe that was called Candy, which emulated Aqua and looked terrible because, of course, it was just squared off Windows 2000 UI, but with these Aqua-looking buttons that look like, pill capsules or whatever. And, my God, that would have been a huge mistake releasing something like that just for the Apple stuff where they'd be like, oh, look at them.
You can do Aqua too, huh?
Yeah.
XP was not the most attractive version of Windows ever.
You like blue and green, and my favorite from XP was always the search dog. And the search dog would come out when you had to do a search, and if you didn't like the search dog, you could turn him off.
Sadly.
But as a final little screw you, it would look sad, and then it would walk away, and it would look back over his shoulder like kicked it or something. It's like, guys,
somebody spent days coding that. I mean, that.
I know. And this was, if you think about it, that stuff, because that dates back to Bob and all of the similar UIs that they had back in those days from like the mid 90s to the early 2000s. So that was in many ways like the first version of like Cortana, right? That was their attempt at kind of a personal assistant. Like, what are you trying to do? Or Clippy, fell into this category too, right?
Yeah, I don't blame him for trying to personalize, computing to make it more accessible.
Everybody's done
something like that, embarrassingly.
You put the dog in Windows XP Home, right? With home users, you don't put it in Pro.
That's just true.
It's like the business UI. Like you have a little in it, like a cartoon dog talking to you when you're trying to search or something.
There's a huge nostalgia market for that. You could offer that as a plus pack for Windows 10. People would buy it.
They would.
By the way, I think there was a thing like that where they had you could replace the dog with like a snowman or something, or a different little character.
I tried some of the other characters, a Poindexter, and
right.
One last thing, and then we're going to move on to the cloud and Microsoft 365. Kredge finally is getting a web screenshot feature.
Yeah. Did you know this, Paul? I guess it had been announced before, but it's in Edge Dev and Edge Canary builds now. But my question is, why? Did it used to be in Legacy?
Explain what it is. So in other words, you're taking a screenshot of the web page, but is the whole web page past the browser frame? Is that what it is?
So I didn't write this.
Yeah, I like that. I would like that, actually. That would
because actually that's a useful feature.
Because you can't really easily screenshot the page that's off the screen.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
It lets you take screenshots of web pages. It says, the feature isn't new. It was in the initial version of Edge, but it was based on Edge HTML then. And it had a web capture utility. So it's a new port of an old feature. Okay. And they show it working here. I guess other browsers have this, right? But my question is why? Because Microsoft has other screen capture utilities that save things to a clipboard, right?
Because this is, they do. But this is just capturing the content on a web page, right? So even if it was just something that, got rid of the browser frame, that would be semi-useful. But if it was something that captured the whole page, including the part that extends below the fold or whatever.
That would be handy. It may do that. I'm not 100% sure. It may.
Okay.
It says captures full web pages even when scrolling and marking them. Yeah, so it
there
does.
There you go. Yeah, so that's why. That's okay.
Okay. So that's good. Yeah, that is good. But I just feel like, oh man, another screen capture utility.
Just join the other 11 ways in Windows 10 you can take
I know.
A screen
Let me let's pause. Mm-hmm. It's the pause that refreshes. Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley, and we will come back and talk about Microsoft 365. But I want to talk about this little doohickey here. This is my don't tell anybody I got this. This is my canary. You might look at this and say, well, that little black box, that's nothing. But to a bad guy, that appears to be a Synology NAS filled with goodies, like a Christmas tree. This is a honeypot, and the best honeypot you can get. I love the canary, and I hope you've heard me talk about it before. I don't know if we've done it much on this show. We've talked a lot about it on Security Now. It was created by a team at a company called Thinkst, Thinkst. Those guys have been in the security game for two decades, but more than just security game. They've been teaching companies, militaries, governments how to break into networks. So they know all about this stuff, and they have used that knowledge to build this honeypot. Thinkst canaries are deployed all over the world, all seven continents, and they're a great tool against data breaches. Now, we know, if you read the news stories, you know that one of the things, especially now with ransomware that happens, is once the malware gets into your system, giving the bad guy access, they don't immediately trigger the ransomware. No, they wander around. They gather data. Lately with ransomware, they've been exfiltrating data so that they can blackmail you two ways. If you ever want your data again, you're going to have to pay us to get the decryption key. And if you don't, we will release all this private data that we've exfiltrated from your system. That is a nightmare. That is the worst. Canary wants to, they're here for you to protect you against this kind of nightmarish scenario. On average, it's 191 days before a company realizes there's been a data breach. And a lot of that time is spent, we call it an advanced persistent threat. It's spent by the bad guys mapping the data, looking for stuff, exfiltrating stuff gradually, just wandering around your network unheeded. Canary is designed to be easily installed, easily configured. I've just connected it to a network port, plugged it in, went to the Canary page, configured it, and you can configure it as a variety of things, a Windows Server, Windows Client, every iteration of Windows Server, a network-attached storage, a switch. You can even make it a SCADA device if you want. And down to the MAC address, they give you a MAC address that matches the ostensible manufacturer. Down to the login page, if you hit this IP address of My Canary, you'll see a Synology login page. It just looks like the real thing. You type it in. You try to log in. Maybe you use you got the email of the controller, and maybe you type in a reasonable password. Immediately, I'm notified. And I, by the way, I get that entire scenario. So I see whose name you're using. I see what other things you know. You could decide how you want to be notified. By the way, that's one of the things Canary does really well. They don't kit you with 100 notifications. They're rolled up into actionable notifications you can get via email, via text message. You have a Canary console. You can use Slack. They support webhooks, which means you can pretty much put it anywhere. Syslog. They even have an API, so you can incorporate it into your own dashboard if you want. The alerts make it possible for you to respond quickly. And you just get it when it matters. In fact, I haven't heard from my Canary in months. Although I know it's there because we're reviewing at one point another storage device, which we put on the network. And for some reason, it went around checking every port on our network. It was like snooping around. And I got an alert from my Canary. And it was like, what is that? We looked at the IP address and said, it's inside the network. We went and we tracked it down. We removed it. I know it's working. But the best part about a Canary is when you don't hear anything, because that means you're safe. Canaries are really one of the best tools for detecting breaches. You can set them up to look like anything. They don't look vulnerable. They look valuable. Plus, you can create Canary tokens with your Canary, which are files, PDFs, Word documents, whatever you can spread all over. They look at, you know, absolutely real. I have Excel spreadsheets on some of our storage devices around here that say payroll info or, you know, employee info. If they're open, bing, I get the notification immediately and all the information I need to mitigate. It is a great tool. And if you want one, by the way, you can enroll them in Active Directory even. So, you want to make it so that they stumble upon it, you know. And, of course, as soon as they investigate further, you're notified. I'll give you an idea of pricing. There's some, you know, some small businesses might have 5 to 10. Some big banks have hundreds. Just depends on you and your needs. Let's say you wanted to get 5. That's $7,500 a year. You get your own hosted console. You get upgrades. You get support. You get maintenance. If you accidentally sit on the Canary or something or hit it with a hammer and it breaks, they'll just send you a new one right away. Part of the deal. If you go to canary.tools/twit and use the offer code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us section, you're going to get 10% off that price, and you're going to get that forever, like as an ongoing customer, 10% off. And we know you're going to love your Canary. I do. This thinks Canary is amazing, but if you're not happy, you could always return it for a full refund anytime in the first 2 months. 2 month money back guarantee. It's really a must have. We talk about security. There's no magic bullet. All security is layers, but this is a layer you gotta have. You gotta have. Canary.tools/twit. Enter the code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box. If you are running a company network and you don't have a Canary on there, how would you know if somebody's in there wandering around? How would you know? Canary.tools/twit. You'll know. Use the offer code TWIT for 10% off. For life. Back to Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, and now the topic moves to Microsoft 365.
Yeah, it wasn't a good start to the week for Office 365.
It was kind of down or something. It was a little bit down.
Yeah, there was a big outage on the 28th that it was kind of a cascading outage because everything they tried kept failing. Originally, the outage started in the Americas and people were saying they couldn't sign in to Microsoft 365 and related services. So then it turned out it was an authentication problem having to do with Azure Active Directory, which is what Office 365 uses for authentication. So Microsoft got word right off the bat of the problem. They saw lots of people who were not signed in, unable to sign in. And so they made a couple mistakes. The first mistake was they were putting the notifications about what was going on in the administration center for Office 365. Well, if you weren't signed in, you couldn't sign in to see what was in your administration center. So you didn't know what was happening. You just saw them saying, we're giving you all the updates on the administration center, which you couldn't get to because you couldn't sign in. So that wasn't great. And then they tried to do a repair and fall. Well, first, I think they tried to do a repair. Then they tried to do a rollback of a patch. And none of those things worked. And then they had to start migrating to an alternative set of servers to try to go around the problem. And it just was going on and on and on. And then even yesterday, I saw people still having problems with SharePoint Online and Exchange Online, and especially when signing in for mobile devices. And today I saw they were having additional problems.
Nice. Somebody suggested they should rename it Microsoft 364.
Yeah.
And then, you know, everybody be okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the stores open 24 hours, but not in a row.
Not in a row.
Yeah. It wasn't a good day because it started around, I think, around 5 p.m. on the 28th East Coast time. And I was just watching as Australia was coming online. I'm like, oh, here, now it's starting to hit them. And here we go. So, yeah, it went on multiple hours. I'm looking at the report right now in the Azure status history, and they said, we've identified the preliminary root cause. There were three separate and unrelated incidents, a code defect in a service update, a tooling error in Azure AD safe deployment system, and then a code defect in their rollback mechanism. So, yeah.
Perfect storm.
Yeah, that's kind of nowadays when you get these outages, it's almost always that. It's like any one of those we could have handled. But they pile one on the top of another, and it's really hard to mitigate.
It is.
What would solve this problem is if they moved Azure to Linux.
That would be
never
the solution. Happen.
Yeah, it never happened. Nope.
Yep.
Never happened.
Yeah. And, you know, every time this happens, I'm like, okay, where's the first person who's going to say, see, if I used on-premises instead of the cloud, this would never happen. Oh, yeah. So usually like 30 seconds in, you start seeing those people. And I'm like,
they're online waiting.
They're waiting for it. Yes.
By the way, it is notable, and it's kind of an interesting coincidence. In the past 7 days, there have been major outages at Google, Microsoft, and now Apple as well.
Yeah, I noticed that. Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Wow, really?
It's a troubling coincidence.
That's very troubling.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, then. Yeah, so there'll be more information on the Azure history page within probably the next 48 to 72 hours, they say, if you want to know the full post-mortem on this. But yeah, let's just say they're definitely going to have to make some changes so this doesn't happen again in the future.
This actually impacted me yesterday. I was trying to reach Brad on Teams on the mobile app on the phone because I was out in the world.
Yeah.
The app would come up briefly. You could see the list of conversations, and then it would just flash to a white screen and had kind of like a light blue border, which is not the Teams color scheme at all.
Yeah.
And it would look like a web page. In fact, one time I think it actually had a little web. I think it did. It had like a little no response or something, like a web type error message. And all I could think was, because Brad was waiting on a response from me, and I was thinking, you know, he's going to blame me for this. So when I finally got back to the computer at the hotel, it actually worked. And I said, hey, I know this is going to sound impossible, but I couldn't reach you on Teams earlier. I was going to respond. He goes, no, there was a major outage today. And I'm like, oh, thank God. You know, that it wasn't me. You know, it wasn't my fault. I'm like, I would have texted you eventually. But.
Yeah. I didn't realize so Google and Apple also had outages. That's interesting. Yeah.
Google was before Microsoft, and I think the Apple one was maybe concurrent or just after or something.
Oh, well, these things happen. I mean, and they happen on-prem, too.
They do. That's the thing.
Let's not forget.
Well, the problem with on-prem is when it happens on-prem, it's on you. You know, you have to figure it out. It happens to Microsoft. Yeah. Go grab a sandwich and relax.
Yeah. You know, you get some time off.
Yeah. I know. It's a mixed blessing because they talked earlier this year about how they were moving more of their remediation kinds of stuff and messaging to admins to the cloud so that they could kind of take it to your private admin center and talk to you only if an outage applied to you. But the problem is when that's behind what you need to get to with authentication and authentication goes down, then it's a problem. Yeah. So,
that's when you break out your copy of LibreOffice and you just start a whole new path forward.
Call Eric Raymond on the hotline and you're like, Eric.
What's the LibreOffice version of Teams?
No, it probably is one. Stream users are going to have to. What is stream? I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. What you talking about? Stream.
So Microsoft Stream is their video app, but there used to be one called Office 365 Video, and then they launched it a couple years ago as Stream. So this is for people. It's like your internal YouTube channel.
I remember that. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to have videos that you share within your organization or even external to your organization, you can use Stream to record them, edit them, store them. And at Ignite last week, Microsoft said there are going to be some major changes coming to the Stream video app. Because they listed a whole set of limitations of the current Stream app, which is basically it's not consistent across Microsoft 365. So it's siloed, right? Like things you do in Stream, they don't apply to Teams. They don't apply to other parts of Office like SharePoint. So what they're going to do is
what happens in Stream stays in Stream.
It does, which is not a good thing in this case, right? So what they're going to do is take SharePoint Online and OneDrive, and they're going to use that as the back end for managing all videos across Microsoft 365. The good part about this means you inherit the compliance, the governance, the permissions of SharePoint and OneDrive. And so those will all come to the new Stream. The bad news is if you're a current Stream user, you're going to have to migrate to the new Stream. And they haven't given the whole calendar for how this will happen. They're saying it's going to happen in phases and that they're going to tell people as each phase occurs. So you'll have a lot of heads up, but
this is something I could have used last week because I just used Stream.
I know
Stream.
You're saying that, right? Yeah.
And I really, honestly, Stream is surprisingly good. I'd never really used it. You could record, if you have a Teams meeting, you could record it directly to Stream. It'll generate captions and do all that stuff. 1080p. Mm-hmm. It's pretty nice, but the problem is related to what you just said, which is the sharing and permission stuff, because it has its own system and it's completely convoluted. And all I wanted to do was have coworkers be able to access this thing, which they should have been able to do by default. I don't even understand why it was so difficult. We struggled with this for like over an hour trying to figure this out. And if it just, if it just OneDrive / SharePoint, mm-hmm. It would just work. So I can see why they're doing it.
Yeah. So if you're a current Stream user, if you use it now, just know you're going to be migrating again to the new Stream in phases. But hopefully the pain will be worth the gain.
I mean, based on what I just experienced, I would say it probably is going to be, I wish it was like that now. I mean, because that would have been obvious, how to make that work.
Yeah.
So congratulations to Microsoft, winner of the 2020 Jedi contract.
Yeah.
And maybe in response,
like, it's like winning the NBA championship in a COVID year. Is it like an asterisk on that?
It's an asterisk. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But I wonder if this has anything to do with their announcement. They're going to do a telco grade cloud. Mm. What does that mean, even?
Yeah, so it doesn't really have anything to do with Jedi, but it has more to do with 5G and the fact that Microsoft has many telcos as customers, right? So this year they bought 5G companies. They bought a company called Metaswitch Networks and they bought a company called Affirm Networks. So I saw a lot of people on Twitter saying, uh-oh, Microsoft's going to set itself up as a carrier. They're going to become a telco. They look at it like they're buying 5G companies. This is happening. But actually, they clarified that this week and said, no, we're not trying to become a telco. We're just trying to be a better partner for our telcos. And we're trying to make it so that they can use our services, whether they want to use the whole enchilada, all the way up platform, all the way up to cloud gaming and everything else. Or they can pick and choose individual services and customize them and make them part of their platform. And the initiative they have for this is something called Azure for Operators. So if you ever hear that term, it's their strategy for being a better partner for telcos. And they went public with that this week, talked about how, don't worry, we don't want to be a 5G company. We're not trying to be a competitor to Verizon and British Telco and all that. So this is Microsoft just becoming, basically they have a handful of vertical markets like healthcare and telecommunications and finance, and they're trying to build out Azure so that it works as a great platform for those customers who are in those particular vertical segments. That's it.
That's all there is. There ain't no more. When you said telco grade, I was thinking, remember the old days when the phone company was supposed to be super reliable, and even if there was a power outage, it would always work. And remember those?
Remember those days? I mean, now that telecommunications are electronic, the power goes out and you're screwed.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
it did work for a long time. I told my mom, you know, always have a phone that plugs into the wall and nothing else.
Of course, just for 911.
Yeah. I think the last time the cable company was there, they cut the copper.
Well, that, by the way, they do that, and that happened to us twice in different homes, and they don't tell you that they're doing that, and you think you're paying for a landline, and you've been paying for some...
Yeah, they're supposed to. It's crap. The internet-based telephony.
Yeah.
If the power goes out, you don't have a phone.
Yeah. Yeah, and you were relying on that. That's the reason you were paying for it, probably.
When we first got a triple play... Comcast put a big battery in the garage so that if the power went out, the phone would work for a while. But they never paid attention to it or maintained it or told us anything about it. So, a year later when the power goes out, the battery goes, huh? What?
What kind of battery was it? Was it one of those big, rectangular things?
It was a big lithium. I don't know if it was lithium ion or probably, it wasn't because it was so long ago.
It looks like a D battery, but it's 6 inches.
Yeah, it was huge. Yeah, right. One of those.
And then
I upped my Comcast. I wanted to get higher bandwidth from Comcast, so I called them and I said, I noticed on my bill, I didn't even know I have this. I have telephony from you guys. I don't use that. You can cut it out. They said, okay, but it'll cost you $50 more.
Exactly. Same. That's exactly what Verizon Fios did. Mm-hmm.
I said, wait a minute. You're telling me if I don't get it, it costs me more? Yep. I said, well, I guess I'll get it.
Yep.
I think we still had a phone hanging on the wall the day we left out. I'm like, just...
Well, I mean, I have an AT&T, Ma Bell phone, by the way, which only plugs in to the wall.
It have a 20-foot, cord.
Yeah, so I can wrap myself around when I'm talking on the phone. But I don't even know if that works anymore. They probably cut the copper when they had the chance. Yeah. Jerks.
It works, but I still have a regular Zoom phone.
Yeah, you should.
No, I keep a phone especially because a lot of times you're like, yeah, my cell connection's terrible. Let me use my regular phone.
Right. Yeah. And how else are you going to call the super?
It's worth it for that, sure.
No. Google's auction screen on Android.
Yeah, so remember in Europe that Google was forced by antitrust regulators to have choice screens for search and web browsers.
The browser ballot. The famous browser ballot.
Exactly. So of course, it's Google, right? So they have to do everything really strangely. So they have an auction. And it's, I don't know, it's like a silent auction, I think. Like no one knows what the other companies are bidding. Mm-hmm. So somehow they've turned this into a revenue generator. But their companies are bidding to get a spot on this screen. And they bid on different markets, the different countries. So all of the countries in the EU could have different ballot screens or auction screens. So the last time they did this, and I guess they do it every 6 months. So the first time they did it was, January, February, something like that. And Microsoft didn't try at all, and they got on almost none of the screens. And it was kind of strange. Like, why wouldn't they even try? So for this new round, which Google just announced the winners, Bing was not actually the overall winner, but they were the winner among they're the only top tier choice, really. So they actually won a bunch of them. So they won the tops, or A spot, because they're random. A spot on the ballot in 13 of the 31 countries involved. But they're the 13 most lucrative markets, right? Austria, Belgium, Denmark, Norway, Spain, Sweden, the big countries. And then this time, DuckDuckGo, which had done really well last time, did really, really poorly. And they're only on four of them. And it's like Bulgaria, Croatia, Iceland, and Liechtenstein. It's like, what's going on here? But anyway, I guess they do it every 6 months or something. So Microsoft will be, I guess, in a better position this time to have at least have their choice be in there. Whereas last time they were not really in there that much at all.
Browser ballot. Remember browser ballots?
Yeah. Sleep. We would not know of Sleepnir if it weren't for the browser ballot.
That's true.
I wonder if you could still. Actually, I should Google it, see if you could still.
Sleepnir.
Sleepnir.
Sleipnir still based on Internet Explorer Sleipnir?
It's a proudly 8-legged horse ridden by Odin, but I don't see the browser anymore. I don't know if it's still around. I think it's a Scandinavian thing. You just don't understand. You can get it like on. Yeah, this always worries me when you can download it from Soft Tonic, or you know, oh, that's you know,
oof. Good old Soft Tonic.
Yep, Soft Tonic's got it. It must be File Horse, the Windows Club, all the
like
downloads.
Download 1171 on Soft Tonic. You know,
It's actually a Japanese. It was developed in Japan.
That's funny. I thought there was a Japanese one as well. So that is the Japanese one.
It is. Okay. They just decided to give it a Nordic name. All right. We've learned something here today, I think.
Yep. Sorry about that.
Sorry. Yep. Let's.
Useless information.
Delaying the inevitable.
Sure.
Yeah.
This will be quick.
You know what? It has to happen.
It has to happen.
Rip it off like a Band-Aid.
Paul, have you been able to get an Xbox yet?
No. Thank you for bringing it up again.
Well, I really want one.
So you haven't either? Neither of you guys have been able to get one? You know what? I should just try randomly.
You would get it. Of course, you would get it. Right?
There you go.
Then you could auction it off between me and Paul.
Do not you dare.
I will.
Do not you dare.
I bid $1,000, Mary Jo.
I'm going to try it, you guys.
I don't even want it. She'll like to take pictures of it like it has plant in it or something.
What do you want, the X or the S?
Here's my cat.
Oh, not the S.
I turn it on so the cat can sleep on it.
That is something, by the way. A lot of people buying the S... For some reason, because it's everyone wants the X, right?
Of course,
yeah.
Okay,
all the cool kids again.
People want the S, like because
is the S the cheap one?
Yeah,
the cool little one. Yeah.
I think some people are buying Xbox One S's.
Oh, by the way, that definitely happened.
Yeah,
because people have no idea.
They don't know.
That's kind of the problem with this branding. These names are bad.
It's confusing.
Like when you
see the S and you go, well, that's for me. I can get it. Look, I can get it.
They're bad on a different level, though. So remember with Xbox One, there was the original Xbox One, there was the S and the X, but they were all Xbox One consoles.
Yeah.
So what do you call these consoles? There's a Series S and a Series X. So what's the name of the console generation?
Right.
Right.
Xbox Series?
Series?
That's a terrible name. It's not a name.
I'm convinced that there are a lot of dads out there who went out and bought it. They said, oh, I'm going to. And they saw the 1S and they said, great, this is what Junior wanted.
Or they got the X and they got it at a crazy low price. And they think they're geniuses.
Wait.
I saved $300.
I got to tell you, Christmas Day, there's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Anyway. Is it expected? Sony said this would happen, that there will be another tranche of Xboxes, so you just keep your eye on these sites. And
I emailed Microsoft, and they told me that there would be more before the launch.
Good.
Publicly, however, it's been interesting because I've seen other places quote them as saying we will have more at launch. But they told me before launch. So,
yeah, I put a dedicated Ethernet port in the wall for it.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm serious about this.
Is it Xbox green? Do you have like
a green panel? I painted it. I have a home for you. Just come on.
Every day I just look at it wistfully.
Somebody said this is the Xbox Series confused. That might that would help.
Right, but it's a weird problem with the branding. I know why. I mean, S and X kind of map to the previous gen. Like, I get that part of it, but.
But what generate? They didn't. They left out what generation this is.
Yep, it's very strange.
Yeah, it's confusing. I think it's, Games of Gold, ladies and gentlemen, I forgot to mention, this is Fiscal New Year's Eve.
Fiscal New Year's Eve.
Tonight, at midnight, the new fiscal year begins.
For Twit.
For you?
No, for the U.S. government. No. But
I see. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Fiscal New Year's Eve. It's a new holiday I'd like to celebrate every September 30th.
I like it.
But it does mean that tomorrow is October.
That's true.
How did that happen?
This terrible year.
How did that happen? That means there's new games with gold. The one selling point of October.
Well, it's still around. I mean, the rumors are that Microsoft's eventually going to get rid of Xbox Live. The Xbox Live Gold, anyway.
Yeah, I'm just going to buy the $35 everything pass.
Well, the good news is if you do have yourself stockpiled some Xbox Live Gold, at some point you can just roll it into Xbox games, Xbox Game Pass, and you'll still be able to use it. So, and we'll see what happens. Anyway, so yeah, it's October tomorrow. I believe actually the first of these games are available today, but the they've announced the games that are coming to Xbox Games with Gold. None of these are particularly interesting to me. I'm sorry. I heard the term Slayaway Camp, and I thought this was going to be excellent, but it looks like it's some kind of a cartoony thing. So yeah.
They're doing Halloween stuff, scary stuff.
Yeah, actually, they are. Yeah, that's true. They're all kind of horror or Halloween themed. That's kind
of the cool. Maid of anyway. Skrr.
Yeah,
Skrr.
I've heard of it. I know. The Sphinx.
The Sphinx.
Costume. I mean, two of them are kind of cartoony. I don't know. Usually, sometimes these are great.
You just don't know. You just don't know.
They're not my thing.
Not my thing either.
We also, let's see, get out of that. Oh, I opened that three times for some reason. I guess I had the wrong link. Anyway, they also announced the first Xbox Game Pass games that are coming in October. Remember, they do two drops every month, or two announcements.
These are ones you can buy, but for less. Or free. No,
these are the ones, if you have the subscription, you get as part of the subscription. Right? Nice. So October is going to be a big month, because we know that Doom Eternal is coming, and that's going to be one of the games. And then Forza Motorsport 7 is one of the big ones coming in the first half of this month. Brutal Legend. So it's a really good game. Actually, Xbox Game Pass looks really, really good. It's also going to look really, really good in November, because they had it previously announced. Now we know the date. EA Play is coming to Game Pass Ultimate. And the date for that is November 10th. And so that's the library of EA Play games. For some reason, I thought there were over 50 of them. I think there are over 50 of them. So the last number I had for Game Pass Ultimate was 167 games. So another 50 coming in October or November. Sorry. That's going to be a big month. So that's good. What else do we have here? Some other stuff. Yeah. Oh, so the one of the big things about the Xbox Series consoles, as I guess I'll try to call them, is that they both have a storage expansion slot, which is like an NVMe based SSD with particular performance characteristics, et cetera, et cetera. The first of those is going to be sold by Seagate. It's a 1 terabyte card. It's going to cost $220. If you thought you were going to buy a Series S and save some money, but you needed more than the half a terabyte of storage that they're including in this thing, you might want to just get an X, because that's a lot of money for a terabyte of storage. Hopefully that will come down over time. And hopefully there will be other choices. So we'll see. But as of this holiday season, that's it. So if you want the storage expansion, you're going to have to pay for it. And then the other big news this week was something called Luna, which is Amazon's version of Stadia. From what I can tell, it looks very much like Stadia. I don't know. I'm kind of confused about this. I think where Luna will make sense is it's Amazon, right? So they could, I don't think they are, but they could make it something part of Prime, where you know maybe it's less if you're a Prime member, kind of like Amazon Music Unlimited costs less if you have Prime, something like that. But I would say that what this maps to most closely is Stadia. It looks very, very similar to what Google's doing.
Don't you have to buy the game with Stadia?
Yes,
so that's true. Not with Luna. It's 100 games at launch, just kind of like more like Microsoft, actually. Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Yep.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Why would someone choose this over the Microsoft thing? Maybe because Amazon has some loyal customers and they maybe adopt a bunch of their services.
Maybe because you can play it on iOS.
Yeah, that's tough.
But you have to play it in the browser, which is weird.
That is weird, but it works. Maybe Microsoft could learn a lesson from that.
Yeah, I guess are they doing a, is it a PWA?
I bet it is.
Using WebGL.
Not a bad idea.
Or WebSM.
The problem is Microsoft had this platform, and it was going to work everywhere, and Apple really threw a wrench into that, and they'd have to make a special client. I bet they do if they have to.
This is really intriguing to me, and we'll see when this launches. But it could be that that's a limitation that means that they can only – those 100 games will be just Amazon games.
Yeah.
Are they doing AAA titles? Are they doing –
They're not doing anything that other people don't have. So that's why I equated it to Stadia, because it looks very similar to the Stadia lineup, the game lineup.
Oh, yeah. It is AAA titles.
But it's, nothing in the way of exclusives. Nothing, right. They don't own, they have Twitch, right? So that's obviously a big deal.
But it's, there's Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Yeah,
there's
you can get that.
Yeah, there's normal. Yeah,
I think the point here is that they have a big audience and they can put this in front of them, and some will do it.
Right.
You know,
and it's cheap. Yeah. It's $5 a month.
Mm-hmm. And I signed up. You know, it's an early thing, like just like the Amazon Halo Band.
Invite. Yeah.
You can kind of sign up and say, "Yeah, I'd like to try it." And I'll try it. Yeah,
and then they are going to have Ubisoft in it.
So, do they have Sega? Because that would really
Sega. They might have Rayman.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. If you're a gamer, xCloud, especially with the acquisition of Bethesda, xCloud is really the only game in town.
Yeah. It's a good choice of words, too.
Mm-hmm. You can have that, Chris.
Yeah.
I give it to you. The only game in town.
The end.
The end.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a little break, and we will come back with the back of the book. Paul's tip, Mary's code name, maybe some beer, all the stuff you tune in for. But first, a word from our sponsor. Our show today brought to you by Twilio. I know, Paul, you're a developer, so you know Twilio. Twilio is really amazing. Twilio, basically, if you think of it this way, Twilio is the way you communicate with your customers. You build this into your platform, whatever it is you're doing, and suddenly you can engage with your customers on any channel they want, anywhere, from text messages to emails to phone calls to video. One single platform. Twilio is at scale. 795 plus billion interactions across channels with five nines of uptime. That's 99.999% uptime. 3 billion phone numbers available across more than 100 countries. Twilio knows how to do it. And they make it easy for you, too, as a developer. Shopify uses a Twilio. They run their entire 1 million customer global contact center on Twilio's Flex. That's Twilio's programmable contact center solution. Blue Apron uses Twilio's SendGrid to power their newsletter emails. When you log into Netflix, I hope you turn on two-factor. And if you do, you're using Twilio. By the way, I use Twilio's Authy, ride-sharing and contactless delivery services like Lyft and Uber. They text you, right, when they're on their way? That's Twilio. I can go on and on and on. Product and operations teams use Twilio to create new ways to communicate with their users inside of applications, ranging from account notifications to text messaging, chatbots, securing online accounts with two-factor authentication. Marketing teams use Twilio to get the word out, connecting with leads over text messaging and phone calls. They send campaigns out over email. They build chatbots to answer questions. And, of course, we mentioned that Twilio Flex, a fully programmable contact center application platform. And I'm just scratching the surface. Pretty much, if it comes to communication, there's nothing Twilio can't do. And here's the beauty part. If your developers are already building web apps, they have all the skills they need to build Twilio apps. They don't have to be telecom engineers. Twilio lets your developers control the global communications network with a few lines of code. That's because Twilio is built by developers for developers. Your developer team already knows how to build apps that text, chat, call, video conference, you name it. Strengthen your customer relationships by uniting communications across your entire business. I've had a Twilio account for years. I'm just a hobbyist, but I can do it. I love playing with Twilio. It'll give me all sorts of capabilities. You can too, in a more serious fashion, I'm sure. Twilio, TWILIO.com. Learn more today at Twilio.com. Twilio, it's time to build. Tip of the week for Mr. Paul Thurrott.
Yeah, so I mentioned I had spoken to a bunch of folks about Microsoft 365. Last week, and you know, Teams usage was number one. That was the one. Basically, all of them said the same thing. The value thing was probably number two. But I was surprised. At least three of the people mentioned. Yeah, I just kind of. You have any kind of tips or you know things that you know, that you've learned or observed or whatever? And at least three of them said, yeah. He goes, this is a feature in OneDrive called Known Folders, and it's a lifesaver. And, you know, for people who are just individuals using Windows 10, you might know that if you go into OneDrive and go into settings and go to backup, there's a UI that has three folders. It's desktop, documents, and pictures. And you can back all of them up to OneDrive or any one of them or any two of them or whatever. And it's, you know, it's kind of a useful feature. But in small businesses, or I guess businesses of any size, it's actually really useful because no one's going into the office anymore. So in the old days, if someone was working on their computer, the old days meaning like February, and they couldn't find a file, it would probably be somewhere on their desktop or in the documents folder or whatever. They'd call IT, the help desk, whatever. Someone would come down and look at it, and they'd always find it. But now they're sending people home with computers, or people are going home and working on their own computers. And so what you can do as an organization, or you can do it as an individual, is just turn this feature on for everybody or for yourself. Now you'll never lose a file because you can just search OneDrive for it. And it will be there no matter where it is on your, well, not literally anywhere, but in the most common places that people store things on their computers. So it's kind of the fail safe for that. Where's that file again? You know, because I work off my desktop a lot, and then I file the stuff away when I'm done with it. And I think apparently a lot of other people do too. Or they just use a default save location, and then they can't find the file that they were just using. If you just turn this feature on, you'll also have them on any other computer, which is super useful too. So if you move from device to device, or you want to access your stuff from your phone, it will always be available. So kind of a useful thing to turn on.
Nice.
And then, yeah. The update of the week is kind of interesting because Microsoft, remember about a month or so ago, they released a family safety app on mobile that was for just general use case, you know, and it was kind of a strange thing because Microsoft doesn't have its own mobile platform. And I had kind of said at the time, well, this seems like the type of thing that Apple should just build into iOS and maybe Google should build into Android. But now they have a separate Xbox family settings app also for Android and iOS. And what this is a very similar app, but it's designed specifically for parents to manage how their kids interact with Xbox gaming. So it works with existing consoles. It works with the Xbox Series S and X. And it lets you, you know, do all the parental control stuff. Time limits, content filters, play and communication settings. So you can determine who your kids play against online if they're, you know, if they're young children especially, or even have communications with. You can approve and decline friends off of a list, get activity reports. You can kind of send them bonus time, like as a reward for, you know, you did your homework on time. Here's another half an hour of video gaming time, et cetera, et cetera. So if you've got little kids and you're kind of an Xbox family or whatever, it's free. So you should probably check that out. It's not a bad idea.
We used to be a Volkswagen family when I was a kid, but now we're an Xbox family. I think it's...
Yeah, that's actually true of my family as well.
Yeah. You can't drive it, but who's going anywhere these days? It's really...
It's not exactly Farfagnugen, but it's...
Farfagnugen. nice German you got there. Enterprise pick of the week, Mary Jo Foley.
So October 1st is also notable, in addition to being the start of the fiscal year for the government, to being the start of the rollout of Dynamics 365 Wave 2 of 2020.
Woohoo!
What that means is the set of hundreds of new features that are coming to Dynamics 365 CRM and ERP apps, plus the new features coming to Power Platform, they begin rolling out starting tomorrow, October 1st, and then they continue rolling out until March 2021. So in this wave two, there are a lot of new features around artificial intelligence, like there usually is with the Dynamics platform. So they're adding a lot of things around customer service insights. What else? Some of the sales insights capabilities. The HoloLens apps, which are the Dynamics 365 branded apps for HoloLens, like Dynamics 365 Guides, are getting new features, as are Dynamics 365 Remote Assist. That's another HoloLens app. And then there are just lots of incremental features for things like customer service, field service, marketing, blah, blah, blah. If you care about this topic, tomorrow, October 1st, Microsoft is having a two-hour webcast where James Phillips is going to go through a lot of these features along with a panel of Microsoft experts. It's a virtual event. You can look it up as Dynamics 365. What do they call it? They call it the Business Applications Launch Event. It's 9 to 11 Pacific time. Just look for that on the web because the URL is too long for me to read you. Or you can look on my Twitter feed.
You tweeted it.
I tweeted it. Yeah. And they're going to talk about a lot of the new features coming in this wave, and basically things you need to know around the Power Platform and Power BI, things like that. So it's worth your time if you care about Dynamics and the Power Platform.
Yeah. Now, as much as this may surprise you, Amazon was not the first to use the code name Luna. My neighbors have a dog named Luna.
Do they?
Yeah. I don't think they work for Microsoft or Amazon.
Well, I didn't realize this code name. And it's funny, I never had heard this, but Paul told me about this today.
I was sure you would say, oh, yeah.
No. Wow. So you have a story about the other Luna, not the Amazon Luna.
Not the real Luna. Yeah, so
in the real Luna is what?
Right, so the original Luna, I guess, in the context of the computer industry was Microsoft launched Windows XP in October 2001, remember? And it had that new UI we were just kind of making fun of. And the code name of that UI, because remember, it was totally different from Windows 2000 and previous versions, was Luna. And Joe B. was on that team at the time. And so in February, there were a couple of reviewers workshops. The first one was in February, and that's where they announced this name. And those guys all came over to razz me because they were like, hey, did you know about this ahead of time? Have you heard of this before? And I was like, no, I never heard. And they were high-fiving each other. They thought it was the greatest thing. Ian McDonald was a part of that.
Oh, wow.
And then there was a separate reviewers workshop, probably tied to like a release candidate that was maybe in the spring. That was the event where they announced product activation. So they had a room. It was just a table with each of the couple of guys from each of the teams. So it was like UI, networking, you know, whatever the sections were. But one of them was product activation. So the guy, the poor guy, I'd never met him before, but he had a line at his table that was like 30 people deep. And there was no one anywhere else. Everyone just wanted to talk to him. And of course, everyone hated product activation when they first announced it, because for obvious reasons. Yep. And that guy, I always equated that event to the scene in Airplane where everyone's standing in line with like a different weapon to get the woman to stop screaming. You know, it was like that poor guy. He got so beaten up that day. So flash forward to October. They launch it in New York right after 9/11. And Regis and Joe B on stage and all that stuff. And now there's a group of Microsoft guys, and they want to go out to dinner. And I was like, hey, I have an idea. Let's go over to Little Italy, and we'll find an awesome Italian place here in New York. It'll be really nice. And that guy, it was the last time I ever saw him, the product activation guy was one of the people who came. So there's probably a group of about 10 people. So I'm like kind of Pied Pipering them through New York City. We go to Little Italy, and I found a restaurant called Luna's, and that's where they ate dinner that night. Yeah. And so I said,
that's a really good restaurant, by the way.
It's still there. That's good. Yeah. So I said to that guy, I was like, hey, dude, you know, I saw you got like the crap beat out of you at this reviewer's workshop. And he's like, you have no idea. He said, like, I got death threats from people. Like, people were really mad about this.
Mario Juarez? It wasn't Mario Juarez, was it?
You know what? I don't remember his name. That's the thing. It might be. I sort of felt like I had never seen him again, but maybe that is who that is.
He did Palladium. Mario Juarez was Palladium. Remember Palladium?
Yep. You know what?
That was him.
I'll look this up. I bet I have his name. I think I wrote about this. I'll look that up. I don't remember, but that's interesting.
So I didn't realize Luna was the code name for the XPUI. I don't know. Maybe I knew and I forgot, but I never knew that.
I might only remember it because of the restaurant thing. It was so perfect, you know?
Yeah, the restaurant's still there. It's one of my friends here's favorite Italian restaurant in New York.
It was awesome. Yeah. I mean, but it was really neat just because, you know, these were like the guys from the team and stuff.
That's cool.
There for them on the day of the launch was kind of neat.
Nice.
Well, I think you have both earned a fine brewski.
I think so.
Yes, as we celebrate fiscal New Year's Eve.
Yes. So I picked another Asheville, North Carolina brewery for Paul today.
This is just the weirdest name beer from the weirdest name beer company.
So the beer company is Burial Beer. They're very famous in the craft beer world.
Burial Beer. The beer you want to take with you into the grave. Is that it?
It is.
Beer name stuff out here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. They have a lot of names that are kind of in the spirit of
funereal.
Yes. Funereal.
It's like a Google event.
The beer pick for Paul and Stephanie, if they go to this place, is called Invocation of the on the River of Laments.
Oh, my God.
And
Invocation on the River of Laments.
Wasn't that like an H.P. Lovecraft story?
It sounds like Stephen Colbert last night. What
it kind of does.
What is that from?
Wow. I don't know what it's from.
Here, I'm going to Google it.
The reason I picked it is it's a Doppelbach. It is
not an
IPA.
I love Doppelbachs.
It's in the, you know, in the keeping with the Oktoberfest time we're in now. 7%, very low on hops. Has lots of things like light and dark Munich malts, English barley, crystal German malts. And it tastes like a Doppelbach. So, like, they describe it as saltine, you know, so very malty and that kind of flavor. Not but also scented, dark fruits. Dark fruits, Saturine. Pumpernickel, and roasted pecans. So
yum. Yeah. So what's it? So a Doppel, there's also triple, right? There's Doppels and the triples.
Triple box. There's all kinds of box, right?
I love triple box. Those are kind of typical Belgian ales, I think. Yeah.
Doppelbachs you're thinking are kind of
Belgian triples.
What's the triple?
Triples, right?
Oh, triple is not the same. Okay.
No.
That's something
Doppelbachs
else.
Are the ones that are usually dark beers. Very. They're lagers, but they're more like sweet.
That's like
and
a triple. Yeah.
Sometimes. But not as sweet as like a triple, and definitely not as high alcohol either.
Oh.
Like, this is only 7%, right? So. Yeah. Usually you see them, they're dark brown in color, Doppelbachs. They're good. They're like almost like a meal in a glass. They're very malty.
The beer that you recommended last week, what was the name of that brewery again?
Wicked Wheat.
Wicked Wheat, yeah. So those Wheat, yeah. Those guys, we've seen that a bunch of times here on taps and stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, all the, you know, it's weird that you look at all the taps and these beers and beer breweries or breweries names you've never heard of. Right, so it's very familiar
local.
Looking.
It's very local, though.
But then you look at the names. What is this stuff? Yeah. Like it's all local. Like they have a huge,
nice,
huge beer scene here,
and good food scene too.
Oh my God! Yeah.
But Burial, here's some of their other beer names. Like they have Contrition, Ritual Anonymity.
Oh my God!
Flesh from Bone is another.
Oh my God! Very morbid.
There is kind of a goth element here too. I think I know the market they're trying to appeal to.
Oh, okay. All right. Just makes me thirsty. Okay. Yes. Okay. We've done it. Thank you, Mary Jo Foley. Thank you, Paul Thurrott. Paul Thurrott in Asheville today, dropping off his daughter at school. That's awesome. And now taking a little side trip to visit the fam. She doesn't need you. No, that's great. I'm just glad she can go because so many college kids are missing. This is her freshman year, right?
It's a beautiful place, too. Yeah, it is.
And it's such an exciting time in your life and to have to be stuck at home with mom and dad.
I just don't want them to be taken from her, so I'm glad nothing happened.
Yeah, I'm really glad, thank you, Paul. You can find Paul at Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com. His book, The Field Guide to Windows 10 is available at leanpub.com. Nice place to sell it because you can get updates and more. There's those great posters. Mary Jo Foley, she writes about Microsoft for ZDNet at allaboutmicrosoft.com. All about Microsoft. That's her thing. And each week they come by here around. Normally it was late today because we had the Google event, but usually be about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. 1800 UTC of a Wednesday morning, and you come by, you can watch too at twit.tv/live. Quick note for our UK listeners, tune in the UK has decided to dump all international podcasts. It goes to a court decision in Warner Records and Sony sued, and anyway, it's a complex, but yeah, why is right. So you can't hear us on TuneIn, but you can still hear us on Spreaker. So if you go to twit.tv/live and you want the audio feed, choose the Spreaker. This is for the UK only. It doesn't affect the rest of the world. But we have audio and we have video there and a number of channels in each. So if one doesn't work, just go to the other one. That's why we have so many of them. Watching live is kind of fun. If you're doing that, join us in the chat room there, chatting live at the same time at irc.twit.tv. And you can get on-demand versions at our website, twit.tv/dubdub. After the fact, takes us a couple hours to edit it. Should be up there later today, twit.tv/ww. Also on YouTube, there's a Windows Weekly channel. And, of course, you can subscribe in your favorite podcast app. Just That's free. Just press the subscribe button. It'll download automatically, and you'll have it the minute it's available. And that's a nice thing. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Paul, if you call me immediately if you find a source for Xbox Series Xbox, I want those that Xbox One S, right? That's what I want.
S.
You told me to get the one Xbox One S. X.
Wait.
Well, you told me. I'm so confused.
No.
X. You want the X.
Series. No, I know.
If you're gonna buy in,
I'm just teasing.
Yeah,
the Xbox Series X. Actually, what I want is the
$35. The signs
I want the $35 a month deal where you get the a deal on the Xbox Series X and you get the games and everything. I think that's a great deal.
I have to get that so I can save $30 over 2 years. It's important.
Yeah. Huge.
Virgil and says, can subscribe to Office 365, right?
Yeah. Subscribe to everything. Subscribe to all the things.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Have a wonderful week. Enjoy your visit to North Kakalaki, Paul. And we'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? I am Ant Pruitt, host at Twit TV. Got a question for you. Have you gotten tired of how bad your photos are looking every time you post them to Instagram? Better yet, have you gotten yourself a new camera and you can't quite figure out why the images just don't look that good? Well, I have a solution for you. It's my show, Hands-On Photography. Each and every Thursday, I sit down and share different tips and tricks that are going to help make you a better photographer and a better post processor. So subscribe today at twit.tv/hop to learn more.